This public spirit, so difficult to create after a revolution was formed under the empire by the establishment of those codes of law, which settled the rights of everyone through the severe morality, promptitude with which authority repressed all injustice. Finally, through the zeal which the emperor constantly exhibited to satisfy the material and the moral wants of the nation, his government did not commit the fault common to so many others of separating the interests of the soul from those of the body, casting the former into the regions of chimera and admitting the latter only into the domain of reality. Napoleon, on the contrary, in giving an impulse to all the elevated passions and showing that merit and virtue lead to riches and honors, prove to the world that the noble sentiments of the human heart are but the flag of the material interests of man. Well understood, precisely as the Christian morality is sublime, because even as a civil law, it is the safest guide we can follow and the best counselor of our private interests. But it was not sufficient in order to reconstruct the nation that the emperor should repair the evils caused by the injustice of former governments, or that he should derive support from all classes without distinction. It was also necessary that he should organize France. A system of government embraces an administrative organization and a political organization. In a democratic state such as France was, the administrative organization was the most important, for it governed to a certain degree the political organization. In an aristocratic country, political action being in the hands of a whole class, the holders of power reign rather than by personal than by administrative influence. The governmental force is disputed among all the patrician families. But in a government of which the foundation is democratic, the chief alone possesses governmental power, as the moral force is derived solely from him. So everything returns to him, whether love or hatred. In such an order of society, centralization should be stronger than any order. For the agents of authority have only that prestige which authority lends them. And in order that they may preserve this prestige, it is necessary that they should have considerable power without ceasing to be absolutely dependent upon the chief, so that they may be subjected to the most vigilant surveillance. Administrative organization, the administrative organization of the empire, like the greater part of the institutions of that epoch, had an immediate object to fulfill and a distant end to attain. Centralization afforded the only means of constituting France so as to establish a stable regime and form a compact unity capable of resisting Europe and of supporting at a later moment liberty. The excess of centralization under the empire ought not to be considered as a definitive and settled system, but rather as a means of arriving at a settled system in all the institutions of the empire. This is the predominant idea and the general tendency, which it is especially necessary to investigate and understand. A good administration is composed of a regular system of taxes, of a prompt and a partial mode of collecting them, of a system of finances which assures public credit, of an honorable magistracy which will cause the laws to be respected, finally, of a system of administrative machinery which will cause the life to circulate from the center to the extremities and from the extremities to the center. But that which especially distinguishes a good administration is that it calls forth all kinds of merit and all rare faculties to illuminate its career and put in operation all improvements, that it represses with vigor all abuses, that it ameliorates the lot of the poorer classes, that it rouses to activity all branches of industry, that it holds a just balance between rich and poor, between those who labor and those who employ, between the agents of power and those who are controlled by them. The convention had divided France into departments. The emperor facilitated the exercise of power by the creation of offices of prefect, subprefect, mayor, and adjoint. France was further divided into 398 communal arrondissements. Each department had a general council and a council of the prefecture. The first presided over the distribution of public burdens and watched the special agent of power. The second decided upon claims of individuals against the administration. The emperor rejoiced at St. Helena in the recollection of having instituted the offices of a minister of the treasury and a minister secretary of state. The minister of the treasury concentrated all the resources and controlled all the expenditures of the empire. The secretary of state issued all acts of government. He was the minister of the ministers, imparting life to all the intermediate actions. The grand notary of the empire, signing and legalizing all documents. The emperor introduced order and economy into all branches of the public service, as well as into the administration of all the institutions of charity. He reestablished the general direction of the forests, of the registry, and of the custom houses, which had before been superintended by collective administrations. The administration of the forests was rendered more economical and more simple. That of the registry was rendered less onerous by a better distribution of the taxes. As to the military administration, we see in the Memorial de Saint Helene that Napoleon found it too extended. They had centralized Paris, said he, the direction of the markets, of the furnishing materials, of the making up, and subdivided the correspondence of the ministry among as many persons as there were regiments. But on the contrary, the correspondences should have been centralized, and the resources subdivided by transporting them into the several localities. The judiciary order under the directory was composed of 490 correctional or criminal tribunals and of 1,798 civil tribunals. In 1800, a tribunal of first instance was established in each communal arrondissement, and it had also cognizance of matters of correctional police, an arrangement which very much facilitated the administration of justice among the citizens. Above these tribunals of first instance were constituted 29 courts of appeal. Each department had a criminal tribunal. The Court of Cassation sat at Paris in 1810. The courts of appeal and the criminal courts were united and received the title of imperial courts. They had cognizance both of civil and of criminal matters. The courts of criminal justice were abolished. The courts of assizes and the special courts were branches of the imperial courts. The union of these two kinds of justice had two advantages. First, to give guarantee of justice to the accused in subjecting him to a less rigorous jurisdiction, one which was not exclusively confined to the discovery of crimes in the matters which were brought before it. Second, the civil magistracy being generally respected, and the criminal magistracy being, from the very nature of its functions, unpopular. The fusion of these two judiciary bodies resulted in causing the criminal magistracy to participate in the public respect which surrounded the civil magistracy.